Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell, and I'm delighted to be sitting across from Aaron Blaby, who has had an extraordinary couple of years, to put it mildly. So not only has he made one of the most lovable, hateable characters in the world, Pig the Pug, and had extraordinary success in the pitch book market, but he's now out there conquering the early reader market with his Bad Guys series, which has... It is world conquering, I believe. Can we call it world conquering, Aaron?
We're getting there.
I do love the way that you are uncomfortable with this kind of praise, because I'll keep doing it all the way through the through the podcast. It has been extraordinary couple of years, right?
It's nuts. Look, in a nutshell, the three big sort of developments, I guess. The Bad Guys has been on the New York Times bestseller list now for 14 weeks.
Woohoo!
Collectively now I've got over 5 million books in print.
Holy hell.
And the Bad Guys are also being adapted into a movie by DreamWorks. So, yes.
DreamWorks. Mm-hmm. Is that an indie thing?
Yeah. It was really interesting. I've just toured America, visiting, like, I did a month over there, and just as a joke, I would say, in case nobody in America has ever heard of DreamWorks, here are some of their films, and I put up images, and kids just go insane at the sight of those images. So yeah, look, it's nuts. It's hard to, my brain sort of melts. I don't try to think about it too much because it's too.
What are the films you choose to blow their brains? What are the ones?
Well, you know, what was really interesting. Again, the first one I put up was my favorite DreamWorks movie is Kung Fu Panda, and they liked that. They were all very positive. But then it was actually the most recent ones. It was Boss Baby and Captain Underpants. They just scream and scream and scream and scream and scream until you take the image down. They actually won't stop until the image is gone, which was great, you know. But yes, it just gives you an idea of the power that they have, just of, you know. They take those stories and blow them up and do it so well. I mean, that's why it's so exciting to be working with that team. They just do it better than anyone. They're great at it, you know. So, which is why the process at the moment. I had dinner with the, because it's being written by. This is the other big news. It's being written by Ethan Coen, who wrote Tropic Thunder, which is one of my favorite comedies of all time, and because I wrote a list of people who I thought would be good to write the movie, and DreamWorks did the same, and happily we coincided. Literally the top name on my list was Ethan, because I think he's a very funny writer, and he's doing it, and we had dinner when I was over there, and with the DreamWorks people as well, and they get it, and it's why I feel so safe handing across Ethan's. I've read his treatment, which is the sort of 15-page synopsis, really, of what will be in the movie, and it's great. It's really, really funny, and he just, you know, it was one of the most nerve-wracking things I've ever done was open that PDF, because if it sucked, I thought, oh, no, this is going to be awful, and it was... I've never been so happy. I ran through the house. I read it to my wife was watering the garden. I read her 15 pages in the garden, and she was just chuckling and going, "Oh my God, they've got it." So, yeah, it's great, you know. And again, he's taken elements. The movie at this point, at least, is loosely based on the first 5 Bad Guys books, and that story arc. But when he has varied it, it's better. So it's just cinematically. He's just thinking in terms of turning it into a big old movie, and it's great. All the little tweaks and changes he's made are bang on.
So I had to, many of us recently had to sit through the credits of the Avengers to see that last little bit. They're long credits.
Yeah, they are.
And you sit there and you think, why wasn't I? I'm about the only person on the planet who wasn't involved in the making of this movie. When you're getting involved as a creator in something this big, even like the screenwriters and directors of these things, how do people manage this army, an army of people?
This is why I feel, and it sounds disingenuous when you say this because everybody says this, but I genuinely feel incredibly blessed at the moment, because what I do, I wake up in the morning, I go to my studio, and I have complete autonomy over this world I'm making and the bad guys. Now, they don't have that, and that's what they were saying at the meeting as well. I mean, they, as ridiculous as it sounds, they both said, you are so lucky doing what you do. And I said, I know, I agree. Because when any film gets made, it's a miracle because somebody has to filter their vision through 200 other people, you know. And when a good movie gets made, it's like the odds of that are astronomical because the vision has to be so strong, the direction has to be so clear, and they have to be the, like, film directing is, whilst I find it, because I'm an obsessive movie buff, whilst that's very appealing to me, theoretically, the reality of having to channel your vision through so many other people is just something I don't know. I couldn't do it. So it's amazing when you see people who can.
Because in your work, you get to do the camera angles.
I do.
You get to do the lighting.
I get to do everything. That's it.
And you, with being an illustrated book, you even have like even more. It seems to be even more control.
It's funny. It would be interesting. I've caught myself occasionally because I just sort of get in a trance when I'm doing the drawings, but occasionally I've become aware that I'm pulling the faces that I'm drawing as I'm drawing them. So I must look insane when I'm working, but I don't, you know, it's not conscious, but it's because I'm doing that. I get to be the characters, and then I get to come out and be the director. And yes, I'm the DOP. I get to change the angle. I get to, I'm the costume designer. I'm everything, you know? So it's a tremendous privilege to be able to have that. I know this is the thing. For 10 years, the only person who cared whether my books existed or not were me, really. Mm. And now with The Bad Guys and Pig and also Thelma, but those three series, knowing that there are kids waiting for the next installment is drop the mic. Boom. You know, that's it. You know, it's done. That's it. It's the coolest thing ever.
Because of Trump, we are sort of developing a new theory. And we had, we had the little glory days of Obama. We had Bush before that, of this other world called the United States. Mm. And you've just done a pretty extensive tour. You've been up and down all over the place, right?
Yeah, I was there for a month. I went all over.
Can you report back? is it okay?
It was fascinating, and I because I'd only ever been to LA and New York. So in this tour was Dallas, San Francisco, Phoenix, Boston, Chicago, Philadelphia, New York, and then Toronto. I went up to Canada. And all the surrounding areas of those places. And I went to some, when I was in Phoenix, we went into the desert and I went to a school that was near the Apache Reservation. And then when I was in New York, I went to schools in Harlem and Brooklyn I saw a lot of America that if you were just traveling, you wouldn't necessarily see because I was in the burbs a lot of the time, going to different bookstores and things. And look, what struck me, just as a children's author, the thing that struck me the most was I was really nervous whether I'd be able to connect to kids in the same way. And kids, there was just no difference at all between children here and there. Kids are kids, you know, no matter where. And I expected American kids to maybe have a higher level of sass or something, but not at all. Kids are just like exactly the same. It's just the grown-ups where it all, you know, it could, but that's going to happen here, you know. The touring, because I'm such a hermit anyway, and I've never had a bad session talking to kids. It's always really fun and easy. Adults are harder, you know, so I don't know. And it's just complicated. It's a complicated place, and it's, you know, I know everybody feels this, but you can never entirely relax when you're there. But this is probably also because I was doing four events a day and a count dinner at night. So that's probably why I wasn't entirely relaxed. But also there's just an inbuilt tension. There's a lot of tension in there and it's very palpable.
So when you started writing Bad Guys, you were writing for yourself and you didn't have these people waiting on every word. Mm. Is that build as you are there, pulling faces and drawing, does the expectation of this waiting audience have any effect on you, or can you put it out of your mind?
Interestingly, other than just a kind of spring in my step? No. If I don't feel any additional pressure at all, which is odd, really. Mm. I should. If I think about it too much, maybe I would, but I don't. I just feel it's just exciting because I've waited my whole life to do this. I've been looking for my whole life to find an avenue to tell a story like the one I'm making with the bad guys, especially. I mean, Pig's such good fun to do, but the bad guys, because it's a long narrative arc.
Yeah.
That is, you know, cherry picks all things from my favorite movies and stuff, and I mash it all up in this thing about prejudice. It's just nothing can kind of dampen down the glee that comes with being able to do that.
So right now, you've got all these American kids reading Bad Guys in a country that is kind of dividing into little sections of hate, and your book's about overcoming all that. So you may, like, we might see this sort of Nirvana where everyone's singing and dancing in circles holding hands in say, 10, 15 years because it'll of the work
down,
you've
it'll,
done.
It'll be down to me. Yeah. No, you're welcome. You're welcome. No problem at all.
Well, on the other hand, you've got Pig the Pug.
Yes.
Yeah, teaching kids what not to do.
Yes.
I'm sure there are a few out there going, this is a learner's manual.
Well, it's really interesting though, because I was surprised that Pig actually even got published in America, let alone is doing well, because junior fiction like Bad Guys, that's middle grade stuff, you can be naughtier. Captain Underpants kind of opened a lot of doors there to be allowed, you know, to have sort of fun. The picture books in America tend to be much more wholesome. They're much more message heavy and you know, they're lovely, but just nothing to do with what Pig is. You know, he's such an anomaly. But he seems to be working as a kind of antidote to that. But I do see more than the bad guys, I do see, like, on Goodreads online, there'll be every so often there'll be a review where someone just doesn't get it and goes, but he doesn't learn his lesson, and it's he's still, you know, and people can read it that it's encouraging bad behavior, which I don't get at all, because that's the point of Trevor, is the kids see Trevor being a good little creature and Pig being just awful. And our kids are smart. They get it. They know the difference, and they can see that, you know, you want to be more like Trevor than this horrible, selfish, lying, nasty little dog that is Pig. But that's the thing. It's comedy. That's the thing, too. I think that's why, I guess it's why the Pig's popular, is that he's unexpectedly horrible for a children's book, particularly for a picture book character. And the thing is, we all relate to it, because everything that Pig does, we all have in us, and every kid has in us. Every kid can be selfish. Every kid can tell lies. Every kid can whatever, you know. So it's why he's endlessly fun to do. There won't be as many Pig books as Bad Guys, I wouldn't think, you know, but there's still quite a few more to come. And the next one is in September here, it's Pig the Grub. It's about personal hygiene. And it's in America, it'll be called Pig the Stinker. But yes, I'm looking forward to that one coming out.
That is interesting, because I recently saw the American cover of Pig the Star. It's very different to our cover of Pig the Star.
It is. It has a more sort of Broadway kind of vibe too. He's got top hat and tails on the American cover. And yeah, but look, that said, there's been a few little cover changes, not the bad guys, but Pig, a couple of little things, which there always is. Any sort of foreign editions, there's always a few little tweaks they do. But happily, both series, they haven't, internally, they've touched very little, if nothing at all. It's which is so lovely. They're just little Americanizations. Like I was saying earlier, that in The Bad Guys, there's a bit where Mr. Wolf takes off on a motorbike and says, "Let's fang it," which was changed simply because there's no one in America who would have the slightest idea what that means. But no, other than that, it's all been kept the same. But the thing that's been surprising too is this Pig and the Bad Guys, and I dreamt my whole life of coming up with one thing that connected. And then there was two, and then what's happened, it's almost too much to process, really, is that Thelma is really, really going well.
So it's one of our bestsellers.
She's not far away from a million copies all on her own.
Holy moly.
Which is nuts, yeah. You know, because she's just, and they particularly love her in the States. I think there's something about, I have written a sequel, which is out next year, and it's an extension of it, that, because at the end of the book, if you're familiar, it feels very complete, the first book. She kind of resolves to just be herself, not have to pretend to be something else. But something had been nagging at me, and she does return for a particular reason, and it feels very right to bring her back for it. I won't say what, but yes, it's
cause last time we met, you were, because of the movie stuff and the rest of it, you were kind of, you had an envious burst of creativity with all this stuff coming out within the space of a few years, and coming all down to, as you told us in the previous podcast, a walk in the woods. And this burst of creativity, you sort of, it worked for you because you had lots of projects going on and you weren't invested in a single project, which could go wrong. And then you walk away from things that don't create for a while and having lots of things on the go. This is a lot of things on the go, like the movie, the touring, is there time for you to kind of hang back and look at what you've done?
But look, this is the thing. The tour was, and it was a month. It was very, very long, because there wasn't a day off for a month. I was there. I did stuff every day. But I'd scheduled very carefully to allow it to happen. I won't be doing anything that long ever again, but I won't be doing anything like that for a while either, because I just can't. The movie, at this point, it's quite hands-off for me. And again, that's the nature with movies. I think that's a point I was intending to make earlier about the movie, is that it's their movie, you know. Yeah. Once I was assured that they get it and they're on the same page, then it's theirs, you know. Mm. That's kind of nice. That they send me the scripts when they're done and I get to read them and contribute and all that stuff, which is fantastic, but it's ultimately... At the end of the day, once I sort of clear the territory, it is me being in the bad guy's Pig and Thelma business at the moment, and just doing that. So, of course, on top of it, we're moving house too. So, absolutely. It's just nuts. It really is nuts. So, look, there's no time off. But it's fine because I get to do this.
Is there any, within the creation of film, there secrets and things aren't out there and known. Do you have any idea who will be voicing any of these characters yet?
No. We've had a few little discussions and things, but nothing concrete, nothing that I could, you know, conceivably say publicly. It's just really nice to be able to say publicly that the movie's in development, you know, because it was... This stuff takes ages, you know, and I met with them first at the end of 2016, and then there was a little bidding war between a couple of studios, and DreamWorks were obviously victorious, but then just the process of doing contracts and things took like a year. So
and beautifully in timed, your rise on the New York bestseller list kept growing.
That was very nice. It was very that was weird though. It was very surreal because I'd never been. I'm 44, but I'd never been until last year. I'd never been to New York, and we took the kids there for a holiday, and. Just as we were leaving New York, the bad guys hit the New York Times bestseller list for the first time. And it was like, what's going on? It was like I was being punked. It was like an elaborate joke. I still can't really get my head around it. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
Aaron, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you about all the different things you've been doing, because it's... there's so much going on with you. Thank you very much for coming in. And we're delighted to have episode 7 out, but for all those kids who haven't got onto it, what are you doing? And parents who haven't bought these things, these are so much fun to read to them, to share with them. You'll probably sneak off with it anyway as a parent and gobble them down. They're all available from booktopia.com.au right now, so get hold of it. Thank you very much, Aaron.
Thank you, John.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.